go near the river, he says, is totally unsafe for you to skate on. And we came back to school on the following Monday, and the school was closed. And George Atkinson and Gilbert Beckwith's father, I don't think it was David Beckwith, he was our banker. They both went through the ice on the same river that he told us not to skate on. And one was drowned, the other died of a heart attack.
I think
Gertie
Melbourne told us a little bit about that.
Yeah, she would.
I was the pupil, and that's, and that shock stayed with me for the rest of my life. So that was very tragic, and that's Gilbert's father. Gilbert's now retired, ain't he?
George Atkinson was
he was the principal.
Principal, and he was a First World War veteran.
Yeah.
Married a Kilkenny girl.
So that's the tragedy. An interesting thing about those days in the school, I neglected to bring the postcard down that I have at the old school. It was called what was it called in those days? It's in the book, Centennial book, I think. Anyway, whenever it was a very windy day, and we used to get a few, and we've had a few recently, they used to send everybody home. It's afraid that the tower, the school was going to blow over. It never did. Never did.
You always hope
later on.
Yeah.
No, not really. Especially not when we're in it, but we look forward to the windy days. But it was very strange. They finally took the tower off it, and then they put escape chutes added that later years. But we had, in those days, no inside plumbing. It was always outside where we had to go, no matter what the weather was. And we had a shelter of some sort, wasn't it?
The back fence.
No. It was one for the girls and one for the boys, wasn't it? Yeah. They did have that.
Yeah.
But we still had a lot of fun, a lot of good teachers.
Down somewhere.
Thanks. Now, what we were wondering about, Harold, was the wages back in those days when your dad was working for Luxor.
Now, we can go back to when I was about, 10 or 12 years of age. And the wages at that time were very miserable, to say the least. My dad used to work for $1.50 for 10 hours. The way wages were, you were paid like $1.50 a day, I mean, for 10 hours, which is only 15 cents an hour. And by the same token, I mean, as a youngster, but old enough to work on the marsh, I worked for as low as 50 cents for a whole day. That's for 10 hours. But those were the rock bottom prices. But Dad had to maintain and care for his family on a dollar and a half a day, and lots of days lots of his days were much longer than 10 hours, particularly when he had to go over to the cottage. He was at the mercy of his employer as to what time he brought him home, maybe 9 or 10 o'clock at night. But you had to put up with these things because work was very scarce, and of course wages are very low, but everybody still got hungry and had to eat. And when you could go up and buy a pound of ground beef for a quarter, it mean about you had to figure that how hard and how long you worked for to get that quarter. And if you could still get a loaf of bread for 10 cents, but you could get a double loaf at 2 a day. pick and drop and then right from the bake shop. And if your good terms with your butcher, but got a soup bone, the soup bone was, if he charged, it'd be 5 cents. Most of the time you got the soup bone for nothing. And liver was very popular in those days. Because you get a pound of liver, I guess, for maybe 10 or 15 cents. And you didn't eat steaks, but what you used to get was a common fare for the family would be a rolled brisket, which was boiled. And incidentally, it's called today like pot roast. And it was very economical to buy that. That was rolled and sliced cold. It was very, very good eating, very, very substantial. And these are the things that you have to remember. When eggs, which now I notice are about $1.80 a dozen, you could pick them up for a quarter of them quite easily. The largest eggs on the market. Chicken and fowl were used only on special occasions, like unless you were the well-to-do families, because the turkey would be at Thanksgiving and Christmas. But now it's a year-round affair.
When I was a child, chicken was a really special meal.
Yes.
Too. But it seems now it isn't so special because it's less expensive. Now, was it because it didn't come in that often,
well,
or was it more expensive?
It was because we didn't have chicken factories as we know them today. And of course, most of the chickens came from the farms, and people used to raise their own chickens. We'd have a few chickens to keep to get the eggs out of them and kill off the roosters and used to use a lot of when they got too old, and used it for boiling fowl. But not everybody could have a flock of chickens in their backyard, although a great many of us did. It was permissible in those days.
So you had
they weren't as plentiful, no. Now today, that's one of our mainstays. I say lots of times to say thank God for chickens, because you go in, you can't afford to buy the meat, but the chickens are still very, very reasonable today. But in those days, there were special occasion. I can remember if you had a chicken, it was a special occasion. And
I was just thinking, some politician, didn't he say a chicken in every pot?
Yeah.
That's a poverty.
Was this around this time?
No.
Or was that a later time?
That sounds like CCF.
That's the chicken.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be when the poverty is over with, then you that chicken, everybody can have a chicken.
Have because a chicken.
Chicken. You see, coming back to this seasonal outfit, this fowl and that, would only be at the same time as we were talking before about hunting.
Mm-hmm.
You never eat a chicken only when the chicken got too old to produce eggs or something like that. So therefore, that was only at certain periods of the year when the chickens come in.
And that chicken that you'd get then after it finished laying its eggs, wouldn't it be ready to put in a pot? It'd be too tough to eat any other way.
Yeah, well, this is what they call, they give them two names today. They call them farm chickens down at the food haven, or they call them boiling fowl, is a general term. And boiling fowl is quite a common dish. You just simply boil them, and they come out quite tender. Then you would fricassee them after. When you put the clean them up, put and mix a nice little sauce, and you wouldn't get anything tastier. As a matter of fact, today, if you have a chance to buy a boiling fowl and boil it, you'll be giving yourself a treat. And just do that, and you can either eat them cold or make the sauce for them like you would for some other cold meats, and it's much tastier than the chickens you buy, which are raised in the
factory. Actually, the chickens that you buy today, you have to doctor them up
so
much. They are absolutely flavorless.
Yeah, that's right.
My mom used to make a jellied sort of a jelly something with
that's
chicken.
That's out of your burning bar, yes.
Yeah.
We used to do that too.
Beautiful broth. And the jelly is chicken soup has always been an old standby for the invalids, see? And times we're all invalids, so we have chicken soup, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a cure for the cold.
It makes you feel so good, doesn't it? Because mother made it.
Yeah, right. Home cooked meal.
Yeah. Home cooked meal.
Did you used to have squab? Have you ever heard of that? Or?
Squab, yeah, well, those are the game. That's the game. The squabs are the pheasants, but they're game. So you didn't get them too often.
No, they were the young ones. They were the very young ones. Yeah. No, we never had them.
No.
We used to have what called the banties. They were just little small chickens, and you'd have to put about a dozen in a pot to get a meal, I think. But they were a novelty, like the guinea hen. They were a novelty, and have but the best in the layer fire was the leghorn. Called it's a white leghorn, and they used to weigh up around 2-3 pounds, and they're the greatest layers I think that the good Lord created. But they still are very very popular for egg factories. And they're calling factories now because it's all done scientifically. Same with the production of the chickens, chicken fryers, and but it's quite a big difference. You could go probably go down to the market in those days and maybe pick up a hen for maybe I'll say 75 cents or $1. But I mean, they would be through laying and that. But the wages. The wages never went up very much. They got up to $2, but they didn't go up until the Second World War, and then camp board, the building camp board, and then the wages started to go up fast then. But before that time, they were pitiful, and it was nothing to go and work on a farm. A farmer would hire you for maybe $15 a month, with your cord that you found. And when I worked for Waldo in those days, he used to pay me $30 and my board, which is just like $1 a day, and he supplied the overalls. I brought my own clothes, of course. that's a sample of what you do. But you go out, if you're working, you maybe get $2 a day. Maybe 10 hours or 20 cents, and then maybe during the harvest you maybe get 25 cents. They used to, remember, like for the harvest, you had to work very hard because a lot of the harvest is used to soak
stripping grain in there.
They pay $2 a day and give you meals then, because that was a harvest. You work really hard. But the farmers are wise, are very expert at putting meals on the table. I mean, they used to put meals that were really something like pies and something. It was really something. Everybody was filled for sure with good, substantial food. But from the farm came the very best, that you grew your own. But they were good days, you know, though. They were tough days.
What about rent, Harold? Do you remember what your dad paid for
rent? He'd pay, I think about an average be $15 to $25 a month for rent. And you didn't get too much for that. You did your own repairs. And I say there's, you'd have to pay your hydro and cut your own wood and get your coal if you could afford the coal. And the coal would be, you'd pay, get how much a ton,
10, 12.
Because we used to go down, most people buy a bag of coal, they pay about $1 for it, and I remember when I was a kid, I used to have a wagon, and I'd go down, Ed Coombs, he ran the coal yard, and he was, very nice man. He's also the reap of Bradford for quite a while. And he'd say to me, he said, well, do you want to go down and clean up my wood yard, he said, and pile the wood up and go and get another load of wood in. So what he meant by that was that I piled up the wood and all the naughty pieces, he said, that the customers didn't like. He said, you can take all those home and pieces that were buried in the sawdust boards and that. I take wagon loads of this odds and ends of wood home. And the same thing applied when he unloaded the carload of coal. There would be quite a few nuggets that's spilled on the ground. And I had seen it go down there and get 100 weight of coal, people, which is a big deal, I know. This is what I, and I always thought you should bring it up alongside the railway. We lived at the mill house then, and so it all helped.
When you say the mill house, you mean the house that belonged to the mill?
Yeah, it was originally the mill house, yeah. It was just... Now, that's, I see it in that picture there. That's where the miller used to live originally. And that's, we lived there. My dad wasn't the miller, but he worked in there. But the original mill house, that was it.
Well, that's gone.
Yeah, it's gone now. It's all the plaza down there. Well, there's a lot of history of Bradford gone. I kind of weep inwardly when I see the way Luxellin, which is the Luke's estate, has gone in disrepair, that someone didn't care enough to salvage it, because it is when our first Reed lived there, for one thing. And there's a tremendous amount of history there, and it's a beautiful, was anyway, a beautiful building. The finest, if not the finest one in Bradford, because the interior was all done in very special woods. And
do you have any personal memories of any occasion that you attended in that building?
In there, I helped my father to caretake the place, and I know what it looked like inside. And I've been up on the tower when he's been painting the roof of the tower, and how he ever did it, I don't know, but I was dead with fright myself. I said that before. And I would look down, all that down. He used to paint all the roofs. They were metal roofs, and it just used to scare the pants off me. So, but he did it, and I remember Johnny Douglas saying he used to close his eyes and he'd see Bert up there painting on the tower roof. But it was tremendously beautiful property. As the picture shows you in its old days there, it is something that Bradford should have jumped in there and saved. They could have used the property.
What about the grounds? The way the grounds were landscaped?
They had all the different shrubs that you could think of, like the turmeric and flowering crabs you named the lilacs, and there are all kinds of walnut trees around it. I used to gather the walnuts up and put them in the hollows of the trees for the squirrels.
Oh.
They used to come down and sit on my shoulder and peel the nuts on. I never thought I'd still have my ears today, but it's very fascinating. There's a lot. It was a large place. I mean, it's all cut up now, but it would have been so nice to have kept it like was. I mean, the town could have bought the property and developed it like they're planning to do now, and still saved the old place. And many people would have complimented them on it. But if the roots aren't here, then the desire's not there. I mean, the people who run the town now, they don't have any roots here, so therefore they don't have the real deep interest. So I'm afraid that it's a lost cause. I write to the Tom Lukes. It was his father and mother who owned Luxellin, with the title they gave it. And he is blind, of course, but he can't see it, but he must certainly have very fond memories of it. And he is adopted son. They adopted him. And his mother, Mrs. Dukes, was one of the rare good angels that we see today, and by severe contrast to Gilbert. Gilbert was quite different. And Oscar was a very fine gentleman. I think Oscar's gone now too.
Yeah.
But they had one daughter, and his wife was quite different. Like Gilbert, she was quite different. Oscar was a very, very fine gentleman. But that's the Luke's family. But Dad worked there for quite a number of years, and until he found things something better. And I don't know just how many years he worked there, but sometimes he used to say it was too long because he was a slave to the job, but he had no other place to go to get him if your bread and butter on the table. Mm.
But there be a dragon shed there too?
They had a dragon shed, which is now today, it is a house. It belongs to town. They're using it for sort of a hall, aren't they? That used to be a double garage, and they used to have, Cadillac?
Stanley Steamer.
And originally a Stanley Steamer, and they drove, story of the Stanley Steamer is that they drove it down the highway number 11 there and drove it into the old river. So I don't know if it's still there or not.
No! They got rid of it. They didn't have any old junkyards in the cars. No. They drove them into the river then.
But we got rid of a lot of stuff in the river.
That should be interesting for divers to go down.
Well, they have pulled a few things out, haven't they, already?
Do you remember what Tom Lukes's name was before he...
Brown.
Tom Brown?
Yeah. It's,
that's what I thought it was. Wow. Somebody said it was wrong.
It was Tom Brown.
Was it Brown with an E?
I really don't know.
No, but just plain Brown.
Just Brown. Yeah.
But they never spelled any Browns around here that I know with an E.
Because I was a Brown with an E.
Would you knew?
With an E? I wasn't a Brown. I didn't come
no, from but what now?
English.
English was it? You must have been up in the higher brackets then, were you?
I don't think so, not at all. Maybe a long, long, long time ago, perhaps.
I've heard that, though, that they spelled it with an E because it was higher up, and then later on, they dropped
the E
off. No, I don't know.
You don't have to ask my dad.
Was your dad still living?
Yeah. Is my dad's 93.
Oh, no. I didn't know that.
And he's got a good name.
With the Brown with the E, but we had a contraction of Brownlee and Vasily. You never know. Mm. See, my name, Iceland, is very rare. Our family comes from Darlington, and there is another Iceton still in the neighborhood. She approached me in the post office some years ago, and I lost track of her. I would love to have seen her, but I think she's the other branch of the family. And she's a widow when she came, and I told her to go up to the house, but she disappeared because she didn't want to bother us. But our family comes from Darlington in Durham County, England, and there is nothing. The other branch of the family they went because my great grandmother, I guess she had been married twice, so there were two branches for the family. Some of the relatives were in the States, but I had contact in one time with. Their name was Turnbull. I think that was a branch of the family, but it never made it. They never got together.
But how did your dad get to Canada?
How did he get? When did he come here?
Yeah, or how did he come?
Oh, he came over, but I don't know. He came by boat. I don't know what boat it was.
No, but was he a homeboy or?
No, he came over with my grandfather and my grandmother. Yeah. They come over with the family. They settled. My grandparents lived in Toronto with Dad, like you did his early days in Lindsay. Yeah, I worked on the farm there.
What did your grandfather work at in England?
My grandfather was a painter. He used to paint the high towers in the exhibition grounds. That was his trade then.
Exhibition grounds in England?
Yeah, no, Toronto.
Or, at the CNE?
At CNE, yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a funny thing. I was stationed outside of Darlington and Croft, and we used to go to Darlington for showers and baths and one thing and another because we didn't have it on the station. But anyway, I came home and I got talking about this afterwards, and your dad said then, he said, why didn't you tell me you were there? He said, that's where he came from. So then we got talking about this pub, that pub. But then Bert Eisen, Dick Noble, he came from there too. From in around that same district.
My dad's name is Hubert Adrian Paul. Yeah. It's just come on that order. And some of these call him Happy. Probably you. I was named after my uncle, and he was killed in the First World War. I have his medals. They were sent up to me by my cousin. She thought maybe I should have them, seeing I was his namesake. But mine is Harold Vincent, and his was William Harold Vincent, I guess it was him.
Children?
I have two children. They're both adopted. And I have a son and a daughter. Son, he was 1958, so I've been making 33. And the daughter's 1960, so she's 31. And I have first grandson from my daughter. Both are married. My son's married. So he lives up in Lefroy. Yeah. So my daughter's still in Bradford. She's planning to go to Newmarket.
And is she married?
But
she's married as well?
Yes, she's married, yeah.
And who did she marry?
She has, that's where the grandson is. Yeah. She's been married over 6 years now.
And her married name is?
Right.
What is her married name?
Oh, her name, married name is Monte Calvo. It's Italian.
But he's a local boy?
No, they're from Toronto. Hmm. So Toronto's not very far away. So she was making a few trips to Toronto. She met him, and so he tracked her down, and then you feel married.
We're speaking a bit about marriage now, so this won't be off topic, but I've been trying to find out a little bit about the custom of the chivalry. And I was talking to some people last night about it, and they remember chivalry being done here in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
And how about yourself? Is this part of your situation?
We were always taught to respect our elders. That is, anyone who is our senior, we always call them Mr. or Mrs. or Miss, or whatever the case may be. And that was very strong impressed upon our minds, and so it was quite natural for us to call someone old, even at our present age. I mean, if someone is senior to us, that we will address them as Mr. or Mrs. By the proper title. And which is the difference between today's children and children of our days. The chivalry part, that was certainly the case. We were taught to respect our elders, that if you're on a bus, for example, and a senior person came on, you didn't have to be told, you automatically got up because you were, you respected the senior person, and you would give your seat. And of course, today apparently that's almost forgotten, but not entirely. I've seen the occasions where I've been very flattered to have someone give me their seat. I must be getting old. But we were taught that, you know, that if you go into, you're always taught to say manners were very important, that it's always please and thank you, that's emphasized. That you never forgot to say thank you for something, which was not necessarily given to you, but something which was done for you, to show your appreciation. So in myself, I mean, I have grown up with a very strong feeling of gratitude to everyone whom I've been in contact with, like yourselves. I mean, I'm grateful to be here because I'm able to pass on a little bit of the history to somebody else. I know that someone else will benefit.
Well, we're very grateful,
yeah,
too. This is wonderful.
Have we got much time left?
No, we're doing all right, but actually, I think maybe the word that I've used is a word that you're probably not familiar with. I must confess myself, I never heard of it either for a very long time, But it was a custom that people had, I think maybe a rural custom, that when a couple got married, after they'd been married for a while, they would have unexpected visitors, perhaps in the middle of the night.
That's your
reason.
And
yeah,
that's what I mean
sure.
by
yeah,
memory.
Yeah.
And,
yes,
and
of
I was just wondering
that,
if you were familiar with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we call
if it
a shivery.
Happened to you, or you participated in it, or whether
it didn't happen to me personally, but it was a custom. We used to call it sugary. So we give
you
the,
called it sugary.
Sugary, this
oh. Easier to pronounce.
Yeah.
We always call it shivery.
Shivery. Shivery.
Uh-huh.
That's
shivery.
It.
How you spell it, I don't know.
Oh, it's weird. It's charivari.
That's all shivery. That's
but
just
you called it
just the way we
sugar.
Say
it. It's easier to say it that way.
Hang cowbells on the bed spring or something like that, or any little thing.
Put a goat in the doorway,
turn the sheets backwards. Oh yes, those things were.
Oh yeah, they.
But they faded out when I got married. I was married incidentally on a stretcher. I was an invalid, so a lot of these things didn't happen. So I was married out of Christie Street Hospital. I was in there, and I took my bride there. And we tried three times to get married before we actually completed the arrangement. We were married with Father Boland, and that's 44 years ago today.
Father
and
Boland?
We were married to Father Boland, yeah.
How would you say
he was
that?
He was the parish priest in Bradford at that time.
But would that be B-O-L-A-N-D?
B-O-W-L-A-N, yeah, just Boland.
Oh,
yes. And he married us. The thing about that was, as I say, we attempted to be married three times, but we didn't make it. The Red Cross used that to help promote their cause. They showed three times. It's all in all different papers. But it's just one of those things, a war story, a human interest story. But we did get married. I went home for a very short honeymoon on the stretcher in the ambulance. Tended off. Yeah, you don't know what life's all about.
So
I was back the next day.
It's maybe personal, but you were in some kind of an accident.
I was casualty of the war, so this is a physical thing, eh? And I was in long confinement in the hospital. I spent about 5 years in the hospital altogether. So I had to come back from the dead, more or less. And I did. I had to learn how to walk again, and learn how to deal with life. If you take time as in the army and the time as in the hospital, 10 years out of your life, it's quite a tense thing. And, anyway, I survived all that, and 44 years later, we had 21 foster children we took care of, and two of our own. So it's we've fulfilled our commitment to God. That's what He wanted us to do, and. An interesting point was that in our church, the Catholic Church, is very strict about marriage, and that they won't marry two people who are known to be sterile. Father Bowen came to me when I was in the hospital, and he asked me a question. He said to me, "No, I don't think I can marry you, Harold." I said, "It doesn't really matter," said Father, "would you marry me or not?" I said, "I will be married." I said, "It's destiny. As God has destined us to be married." And I said, "I will still retain my faith." So he looked at me, you know, and I said that. So he said, "I'm going to see the bishop." I said, "Fine." So he called in later on and he'd seen me. So I'd seen the bishop. And he says, "Tell me." He said, "This is an absolute fact that you can't have children." I said, "Nothing's absolute in this world except God's word."
Well, he learned, I'm sure that Father learned something that day.
He learned. That was the message straight from God as far as I'm concerned. We were married. We had our vocation because we took care of all those children. That was that's what God wanted us to do. And our reward is them to our own.
You were foster parents.
Yeah, we were foster parents for about 7 or 8 years, yeah.
And you managed to look after all those children in that
time? Yes, and their favorite crib, it's like looking at that one Christmas, and all the foster children go home at Christmas, so anytime you don't have them, you would most want them. And I looked at that and I said, "You seem to get the messages, perhaps you should try for your own. Don't forget, I had a serious illness, eh? You see me." So I went into the wife and I said, I said, "It's time for us to adopt her own." She was in there, happened to be in the bedroom. She said, "Do you think we could?" "Yes," I said, "I think so." So we did, and we ended up to the next.
What a wonderful story.
Now that is the human interest, and that is the truth.
That's lovely.
The thing to mention here, I'd like to say that if anybody contemplates marriage, the thing that they have to do in order for marriage to be a success, and I think Joel and his wife are concrete examples, that you have to be prepared to make very great sacrifices. And you have to learn that love is not something that you inherit, it's something that you earn and that you build, and that which grows. It's a seed that's planted, and it grows with each year, with each trial that you survive, each battle that you win, your love grows stronger. Because you learn what life is really about, and you learn what you have to do in life, is make sacrifices. And I don't think anyone taught us much better than that than Christ himself, because he made a supreme sacrifice. So you can always look out there. We're all Christians. So basically, we look to him for the next example he gave us. But in real life, it is sacrifice. You have to make that hard. I know my mother made great sacrifices, and we lived the life of Riley compared to what mother did, mother and dad and do. Okay, and we had many trials. And my wife, where it married me on a stretcher, that's a challenge. She did no idea what was ahead of her. And she had the confidence, and we had her love, which was newly born then, but it was to be severely dry throughout the years, and so we survived, and there's no question after 44 years that there are many scars, but there are many smiles and many happy memories, and so the rest of it is just like as you clean your house each day. Now we are moving to a new adventure in life. We sold our house, which we've been, it's the only house we've lived in since 1947. And we've done all this, completed our vocation there, now we're going to a new phase in life. And this phase is to have some of the independence that we've never had before. We're shedding the burden of caring for house, which has cared for us very well all these years. Now we've sold it and it's someone else's. It's not ours anymore. But all the memories that are in the house, they go with us. They don't stay there. So, and with our furniture, it's except what we're taking. I mean, it's all sun goes to the daughter, sun to the son, the rest of them, so on. So it's a new story, it's a new era. It's called the final chapter. I mean, how long it'll be, I mean, that's God's will. But we're going to try. It's a new venture. And I can't say we're looking forward to it, because it's so easy to look back and see all the history that is rolled up, you know, over the years. But as I said in our 40th anniversary, I said, it's no trick to look back, but I said, it's very difficult to look ahead.
I don't really know. I was visiting with Jesse and Ivan Metcalf yesterday, and they're in their 90s, and they moved into their little home there on Azure Avenue.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, at least maybe 25 years ago.
I'd say,
and they were both saying they had no idea they'd still be there. They thought maybe they just wouldn't be here.
That's true.
So they just think it's, I guess they think it's a miracle that they're still there, and they're both in pretty good health, right?
I would say they're excellent health for their age, would you?
Isn't Ivan, is he not 90 or very close?
93 or 94?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then she just turned 90.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is a miracle.
Yeah.
You see, what the wife and I decided, and sorry, there's always to do, is we decided that the 70s are not like the 60s. And we've both been not good health. I mean, my wife has had quadruple bypass 2 years ago. I mean, I have a file, but the sick down, the doctor's not exaggerating, for the different things are wrong with me, but the point of it is that we have the ability to cope, and this is God's blessing. It's like, as the Bible says, I mean, God says, you never give your cross more heavier than you can carry, because if it gets heavy, you're supposed to go to them and you're lighten the load, which is it's the way I'm going to live all my life. So, I mean, that's my outlook in life. I mean, and generally speaking, I mean, that's why friends to me are real friends. The real friends, like Joe here, no one, we call him Joe. I don't know when he ever gets called Ken. It's just like me, I used to be called Sonny all the time. I never heard my own name for a long time, Bert or Sonny. Now I get my own name. But that's exactly the story of life. And if you want to be, if you want success, you've got to pay for it. You've got to work for it.
Yeah. Your wife,
my wife?
I
should give you a brief on my wife. My wife was born in Port Glasgow in Scotland, and she spent most of her years there until I met her during the war. She was working in the Navy at Dundalk camp. And we became acquainted, and then we fell in love and decided to bring her home. And I have the colonel's permission to get married in my files at home, which I never was able to use, so we finally got married on this site. So she is a mill worker. That's what she worked at in Port Glasgow. The mill is now torn down. And her...
Is this a woolen mill?
It was a jute mill, like these. The ropes, she's the rope mill, really. It's made all the different ropes and that, yarns and that there. But it has now since been torn down, as have the shipyards. Everything has changed right now. But when we met, I guess we knew we were destined to be troughed, as they say. And but it wasn't supposed to be an easy road, and it wasn't. So I had to go over to the continent, and the second time come back was a hospital bed, and the third time go back to the hospital. So that's how the wedding was postponed, but the end result was what counts. And so we've had a lot of happy years together, and we're pleased with the way it ended up.
What part did you play in the war?
I was a 3rd Divisional Engineer, and our job was to keep the empty company carrying beehives, explosives to blow open tow boxes or build bridges. We built bridges for me to cross the waterways. And among the most popular bridges was the Bailey Bridge. It was a sectional bridge and very easy to put over. Then we had another problem on the Cape Cod Bridge. And then we had an Inglis Bridge, which is a little more complicated. But we did this, but we worked with the infantry up front, looked after their needs. And most of the time, we used to delegate one man to carry the carrier rifles, as we had a lot of other stuff to carry. But that's an interesting occupation, if not a little dangerous. You're exposed to that.
So you didn't, I don't know if I'm saying this right, did you see active duty, or
were you?
Yes,
yeah, I did. I was, I seen all the action that was necessary, walking over and around, seeing the results of war. But I was, we worked most of a lot of our time during the type of war we had. We were busy digging trenches to get into now because the enemy was retreating quite rapidly. I seen quite a lot of that before, yes.
And
lots of times we would have to be told that right underneath those cannons, the SPs and SPs shooting out. We have a trench right underneath their mouths. Seen the wars, seen our own planes mistakenly bomb us out of our position. Seen the refugees, which is another nice thing to see for people driven out of their homes. Yeah, I seen the war, and that's what I'm down.
So where were you?
In France, Holland, and Belgium.
What was that again?
France, Holland, and Belgium.
Oh.
And when did you sign up?
1945 is discharged.
That's a whole other story, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure that we could probably talk more.
Well, there's one thing we haven't got, I don't think. We haven't got your wife's maiden name, have we?
Oh, her name is Violet Gallagher. G-A-L-L-A-C-H-E-R. It's a rare spelling of the, it must be a Scottish spelling of Gallagher. You have Gallagher and Gallagher, and hers is A-C-H-E-R. G-A-L-L-A-C-H-E-R.
Never seen that? Okay.
No. It's rather rare.
Also, your brothers and sisters, I don't think we know that you have two brothers who were born in Grasset, and two sisters.
No,
who were
I
born.
Have no brothers.
No?
No.
Oh,
I
wonder where...
five sisters.
Oh, five sisters. Oh, I know. It was two sisters. Two sisters born in Toronto and two sisters born in Grasset. I had a little asterisk.
That's fine. It'll be three born in Grasset, because Pauline was born, and she's the youngest one, yeah.
Would you name out the sisters? And
I can give the name to Josephine. She was Josephine Mary, Mary Dean Clare, she deceased. And then Dorothy May, her married name is Reynolds. And Irene Teresa, she's still Spencer, Iceland. And Pauline Veronica, Pauline Veronica, her name is Deb. And then Evan May, I guess it is, Mary name is Wood.
And where are your sisters?
My sisters are location. Pauline is in Barrie. Dorothy and Eileen are in Willowdale, and Evelyn is at just in Bradford, Middletown, out here, Middletown, to God. So Josephine, of course, is deceased. She lived in Oakville. Both her and her husband are gone now.
Which one was married to Reynolds?
Dorothy May. Yeah.
that a local rental?
Yeah.
Yes, the Reynolds family originally lived in Bradford County. Reynolds and the Creedons.
Well, I think the tape is on its way now.
Yeah.
And
well,
sometimes
yeah,
we do you have anything more?
No, just this Reynolds has lived in the, where the TLC nursing home is now, next to the Lucas estate,
that's
so that'll
right,
kind of
yeah.
settle
right,
that up. And then his father would be, no, his grandfather, I guess, would be Dr. Stevenson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Reverend Creighton is another sister, Mrs.
Yeah.
Reynolds, son, but they lived in Bradford to another.
Well, thank you so much for giving us this wonderful history.
Yeah,
we really do appreciate it, and I'm sure we could probably get together another time and talk some more.
Yeah, it's really been interesting.
You have such a good memory.
I have. The only thing I never try to remember dates. I never could remember school, so I mean, it's a time period.